Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, I have thought for a while of having a show dealing with this subject because it really is a big deal. And when I brought it up in other shows, sometimes people still didn't quite get what I'm talking about. And also, the strange thing about it is that just talking to people in general, I'm finding that most people don't understand what this word is. And the word is humility. And humility is the path for being our soul. If we develop humility, we're developing ourselves along the path back to becoming our soul while we're right here in the physical world. Now, to a lot of people, that may not even make sense, so let's start with that idea. What does it mean to become your soul while you're here? Well, in its original state, the soul chooses to create an incarnate, which is us, because it cannot come to this realm for the same reason that we have so much trouble. And that is that if the soul had to have the senses and bodies that we have, which you have to have to be aware, in the lower realms, it will become as illusioned as we are. And so that just doesn't work, because it needs to stay where it is and continue to do what it does all the time in the what is called the higher mental realm, which is dimensions of time and space away from us. We are still connected to our soul in various ways, but still, that connection is, at best, sometimes feeble, and it has a tendency to be shut down by our own illusions and selfishness. When we are selfish, and particularly when we lack humility, we don't have much connection with our soul. And the less humility, the less connection to our soul. Now, as a necessity, we have a personality, which is subconscious to ourself. The personality, sometimes referred to as the subconscious, or sometimes it's been referred to as the id. There's a lot of other names referring to it. But it has a need to keep us alive and to be in control of what it perceives as a threatening world to us. It also doesn't attain, in a mental sense, an age much greater than about 10 years old. That's pretty hard to understand because most people live at an age greater than 10, but it's only through their self that they grow beyond their personality and develop more mental ability. This is kind of a difficulty for most people to grasp, and that is that the part of us that is so necessary for us to stay alive and keep us alive, it's almost like the autopilot, you can say, is in a struggle with our soul because it wants, or it needs, it believes it does, autonomy so that it can do what it perceives as its main role, which is to keep us alive. That's not a bad thing. If personalities weren't needed, it would be a lot easier for us to live because we'd have less illusion, and I'll get to how and why that is. But the main problem is that personalities are needed. The soul doesn't create a personality just to make our life miserable. We need it in order to stay alive because we are not always conscious of everything going on around us. And because of this lack of consciousness about many things, if we didn't have the personality, we would have serious accidents, run into great catastrophes, and may never make it to even adulthood, much less to the point where our self could literally become fully conscious of everything going on. And most people don't want that level of consciousness because it takes quite a bit of discipline to be at that level, and they choose their we call it laziness. They choose not to achieve that. But without that level of consciousness, then we depend upon the subconscious element of the personality that basically takes information in, okay, it comes from our senses, and it kind of has a selection process. The information that is most relevant to its needs, which include being in control and keeping us alive, and not being encumbered by fears of death or other threats to it and or itself. It does a job. That's its needs, and its needs are to achieve those results by taking the information and looking at the information that's relevant to the things that I'm saying is important to it, and excluding or not making it very relevant to other factors. Which is why when two people go to some event or do something together, they perceive different parts of the same environment. They're experiencing, in sense, pretty much the same amount of information, but their awareness on a conscious level of what takes place can be vastly different. Even if they are similar in some respects, they still have, they have vastly different, we'll call it, awareness of the information that they choose to create knowledge with. So the two people might have virtually the same input and information with completely different knowledge about what the information is about. And, of course, we see this all over the place. It happens with friends and people who aren't friends. But it's typical, and we excuse it, in a sense, without thinking about why it occurs. Even psychologists, and I can say this with some authority, don't really understand what I just said unless they understand the model that I'm using to explain it. And they are not necessarily into esoteric psychology, so therefore they don't recognize what I'm talking about. So in a nutshell, if we look at this whole system, it seems like a reasonable system, but it creates a lot of problems because the self is really separated from the information that our senses gather. And it's only selectively conscious of those things that our subconscious chooses to permit it to be conscious of. Although, if we discipline ourselves, we can overcome this, and the self, our conscious state, can literally take over the role or roles of the personality. Not without its rebellious nature sometimes coming to the front, but it still can be done. And then a strange event takes place. The personality actually can join with what appears to be in its native state, its opposing side, which is the soul. Now, how do you get something that seems to be in opposition to that which created it, which is the soul, to become one or connected, fused with that soul? The answer is through humility. and this is the whole nature of tonight's show, is that the answer is one word. It is humility. The level of humility, literally, as it can be measured, is the same level that the soul and the personality are infusing together. So I call it the path for being our soul. Now, for some people, that's still very esoteric. Like, well, what is humility, and how does it achieve this amazing result when, of nature, by their nature, the soul creates the personality, but by nature, it's more in opposition to the soul than it is getting together. And its opposition is because it finds anything outside of it is a threat and even we'll say, opposing its own will and desire to control and to keep us alive. It also perceives souls sometimes as providing vehicles of death. I could say, well, wait. Well, there's some truth to the misunderstanding of it, but it's not true, of course, but there's some truth to the misunderstanding when looked at from the perspective of the personality. Personality says, okay, I want to stay alive as much as possible in the physical life. And the soul says, your physical life is only as relevant as your spiritual services. The personality says, oh, no, I'm not going to buy that. I want to stay alive as long as possible and with as little suffering and pain as possible and with as much happiness and pleasure and have all the things that I desire. Now, it's a short way of defining it, but it's pretty close. And the soul is saying, all that stuff is superfluous, it's part of your illusion. The personality says, uh-oh, someone wants me to give up all the things that I want and like and that I know are necessary to stay alive, so this is out to get me. I mean, seriously, remember, it never achieves a mental ability much more than 10 years old. Well, to a 10-year-old, the things that I'm saying the personality thinks are really very reasonable. So it is in this contentious state with its own soul. And therefore, it is without serious changes coming from the self, the conscious part of a human being, to make a difference and to move in the direction more of the soul. Without that going on, the natural state for the personality is just to ignore, under many circumstances, its soul. It just ignores it. Because it doesn't make much sense to it to, you know, I got to give up all this stuff. For what? I'm me, and everybody else is them, so why do I do anything other than what's for me? No. Me is the important thing. Okay, let's talk about humility for a second. One of the ways to define humility is the acceptance of our self, of our conscious state, that consciously, we have desires, needs, wants that run counter to God and the spiritual side of existence. So we admit that there's part of us that is an illusion and does things very incorrectly as a result of that. And we also admit that there are tremendous limitations of ourself, there are some of those too, of our personality first, because the personality is extremely immature, even if we're an adult, and it has a great limits on its capacity to truly understand or be conscious of virtually anything. So the limits become incumbent on us, especially in a mental sense, because the personality can achieve a much higher age emotionally than it can mentally. So people can achieve a physical and emotional development that resembles an adult on a subconscious level. What they cannot do is they can't achieve the mental development that is so critical once human beings get past about 10 years old. And so that becomes the big deal. That's where this whole thing is resting, is on accepting that the illusion of the mental part of us is the most critical one to accept. And what is that called? That illusion is called egotism. And or arrogance. Those elements of illusion mentally are the primary resistance to developing humility and the acceptance by the self. I'm talking about the lower self now, for people who know the difference between higher and lower. By the lower self, that it probably isn't right in a mental sense about most things that it thinks it is. Because its personality is so contaminated egotism and sometimes arrogance. Now, why is that true? Well, there's a thing called confabulation. It's a word in psychology. And what it means is that when we don't truly understand something, when we have a lack of understanding, sometimes by having misapplied what we call knowledge and have a holes in our knowledge due to a lack of mental sense, oftentimes, the personality is supposed to take all this quote-unquote mental information and make it correct and put it together for us. But it's sometimes lazy, sometimes inadequate in its development, and it doesn't use the senses very adequately without the conscious part of it, which is the self. And if it gets overly zealous and also wants to be overly controlling of itself, of the self part of us, then a problem comes. Because then the subconscious part of us would rather be right in a, we'll call it, fake way than to be accurate and truly correct. So being right to it isn't right in terms of accuracy. It could be terribly inaccurate as long as it convinces others that it is, and it's held in esteem by others, and even by its own self, that it is in some way much more, we'll say, accurate in its knowledge than it really is. As a matter of fact, it may be terribly inaccurate. And it does this by filling in and making up stuff to usually explain to others, but also even to its own self, why it is right. It's amazing how people do this. And that is the fundamental factor for people today. It wasn't, if we go back before history, in prehistory, it wasn't this way, but it is today. This is the main reason for lack of humility in human beings. Wow. So we got this whole system now that has a soft spot. It has a real weakness in its development. And it's become much worse as humans have become much more mentally attuned and developed their civilization more from mental aspects than from emotional or physical. While we were developing ourselves physically, in mostly prehistory, and somewhat emotionally, and then into the historical part, almost an equal amount astrally or more emotionally and mentally, while we were doing that, we didn't notice as much the problems with the mental causes of a lack of humility. In some ways, humility was related to then the lower body senses, and the ways of dealing with them were more direct. Even the disciplines employed in an esoteric sense and spiritually speaking were much easier to follow. But as humanity has become more mentally developed, humility has become very hard for us because humility relies on a sense we can barely recognize, much less actually know it's working in us. And it's not a sense, but it's the collective senses of our mental body. And so we just almost completely fail to recognize that we are lacking humility and that we are egotistical or arrogant. It's really a hard thing for us to see. And teachers, spiritual teachers, have a very difficult time getting people who they're teaching to do this. And without it, no matter what knowledge is conveyed, the person will not become more spiritual and will not move closer to their soul. It is a big deal. There are so many people, I mean huge numbers, that I have come across that are in this very position. And some of them espouse themselves to be, oh, I'm on the spiritual path. I've read these 300 books, or I've done this or that, and I've read all your books. But it doesn't matter. Knowledge does not develop humility. As a matter of fact, it may be the way a person convinces themselves they're always right and never wrong, and others are when they differ in their thinking. And that's the problem. That's how humility is stamped out and a person doesn't get closer to their soul. This problem is so severe that I would put it as the number one problem presently preventing humans on Earth from moving forward. Now, I know there's a lot of other things that are wrong with human beings. And there's certainly parts in their astral nature, all the glamours people have, and in our physical. But it is not that what's really creating the world of darkness around us, and it isn't what threatens the very existence of Earth. It is the manasic, or mental part, and this issue over humility that is the biggie. And I don't care how much somebody has studied ageless wisdom or thinks they know something. If they aren't humble, it means nothing in terms of their spiritual development. And when people communicate with me in ways that aren't humble, I just ignore it. I don't respond to it. You can't argue with somebody who lacks humility. It drives them further into a state of greater egotism and more arrogance. Arrogance, by the way, is joining through comma monastic thought how a person feels with their egotism so that they not only are egotistical, but they lack love at the same time. So they really have a disregard for other people's thinking because they don't care how much harm they do to anyone else. And once they get to that point, they actually have reached an arrogant point. It's almost like a solipsist where they're the only thing that matters and other people virtually are non-existent to them. And that's a very severe state of this lacking humility. Okay. So, and by the way, anybody who's arrogant is almost always open to being possessed. Almost always. Very dangerous place to be. All right. So, developing humility is the key to the whole way of solving this. And tonight's show is going to be about how to do that. I hope that people who either might be egotistical or arrogant try during this show to open their minds, open their nature to the acceptance that by nature human beings are egotistical at this particular developmental period in the race of humans that exist today. And that alone is a big step forward. The majority of people who are egotistical do not believe they are. They just think they're always right. And the amazing thing about this is that some people say, oh, I think you're the greatest teacher since whatever. To me, they'll say that. And I'll say at another time, you know, it sounds like you have a problem with egotism here. And they'll turn around and they'll say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Of course I'm not egotistic. I know far better than you about me, so what are you talking about? I mean, there's obviously a contradiction in thought for someone to say those two things, sometimes within 5 or 10 minutes of each other. But the real bottom line is that it makes no difference who or what is contradicting the egotism in someone. Because the self is not much involved in the process. The person isn't going to consciously determine the validity of their own statements. Rather, what happens is the self is removed from the equation by the personality, who defiantly says, this is the rule, and says to the self, you're always right and never wrong, or you're going to be always right and never wrong, and that's the way I want it. And I'll convince you of it by doing filtering of the information so that the knowledge you conclude you have will always make you right. And the self says, okay, if you say so, I'll go along with that. Sounds all right. I mean, it for a while makes the person less anxious, and in some ways they feel better about themselves. But in the long run, it leads to great sorrow. And oftentimes, the adoption of subconsciously of very dark attitudes and thoughts, and the susceptibility to not being able to see evil at all. Evil depends upon a lack of humility for its own existence. If most people were humble, evil could not exist. So humility is really the big ticket. I mean, it's like a huge big ticket item, and virtually nobody knows that. And as I said at the beginning of the show, most people don't know what it is. So, if you don't know what humility is, you definitely don't have it. Okay. That would make sense. So, let me then define for you in a more operational way humility. Humility is when faced with anything that contradicts what a person thinks is correct. In their thinking, they, if they have humility, they accept the opposite. They accept the side of them not being correct, and they use that side to apply it to tests of, through both logic, but most importantly, through concepts of truth, to show them the correctness of the things that they are at first in contradiction to. So they adopt the other thought. They don't just say, oh, well, I'll put it over here and try to prove it's wrong. They try to prove it is right. In trying to prove it is right, they actually are working, you can say, towards the truth of others rather than obstructing it through egotism and only finding what they choose themselves to see and understand. Humility is giving up one's own right, righteousness or rightness of thinking. And so if you're confronted with something that isn't what you think it is the truth, you accept it. Let me see how that works out. And you do your very best to see the position that's coming in. The critical element is that a person truly has to give up their way of thinking first. That's called open-mindedness. And people who have egotism find that to be the most challenging part because they suddenly become aware of how much they don't sense mentally of others and how difficult it is for them to even have a clue about what anybody is saying to them. This is a real challenge. That's how you build humility. Is by understanding thought different from your own. No matter how much different it is, even if you think, well, it's really coming from a bad source, so I shouldn't listen to it. No, you leave yourself open to all elements. We look for truth in all ways. And you find truth when the concepts behind the truth you realize, and you don't find any examples of that truth being in contradiction to it after you go through all of the concepts. Some people say, well, I found something that contradicted it. Of course, they found what they found is not something that it's in contradiction to the real concept. It's in contradiction to a fake concept that they create. This is a difficult mental trick that the personality does. When that happens, there's a thing called projection. And what they think is wrong with them is oftentimes what they think is wrong with the other person's thought. It's kind of a funny thing that the personality, the subconscious, lets to pull on us sometimes. The way around it is to have a full understanding, have a whole concept, so that you know why everything is before you challenge whatever the thought is with some examples. Once you know why, then you can see whether the concept is a real concept about a full concept about the examples, or is it just a part of it that you can find examples that contradict it. So you have to find a whole concept, and a whole concept means that you know completely why something is the way it is. If you know why, then you've got the concept, and then you can use any example to see if there's something that contradicts it. Contradicting examples or concepts tell you that the concept in that specific circumstance is not truthful, and there's something larger behind it that's bigger and better. If you then apply it to your own thought, you can try this on yourself. Well, this is how I was thinking, but my concept now turns out to be not as good as the, doesn't answer why as good as what I'm hearing from someone else. And so the answering why from someone else is more complete than mine. Mine is very specific. It deals only with one or two things, and then it doesn't work most of the rest of the time, so it's not a good concept. And it's not truthful, therefore. So I look for the bigger concept that fits everything I can throw at it, as an example. I know all that's pretty hard to understand. The good news is you can listen to that over and over again until you get it. Yeah. Once this show goes up on the Internet. Now, I think here, this is probably the hardest part for most people to realize. What I just said is mental discipline. It means that you're willing to put aside the way you normally mentally function, to think in a way that is much more spiritual and deals with the thing called love, wisdom, giving of wisdom to others. You want wisdom itself to become greater, not just in yourself, but of everybody. So you do this for the purpose of growing more of God, not so that you look better or you're special or anything like that. If your motive is to look better, then you're going to get caught in lacking humility, and you're going to be egotistical at a minimum and maybe become arrogant. So this is the basis of what I mean by humility. How many people really understand what I say? Well, not a lot, because even in the people, the philosophy people, psychology people, and many other kinds of epistemology people who study knowledge, those folks don't have this whole picture, partly because you need to have God in it. And if you don't buy God, if you don't believe in God, then you won't be able to understand the why of anything, other than things that are very, very narrow. And then you tend to be egotistical. So the problem with people, as I talked about on last week's show, who don't believe in God, is they have a lot of trouble understanding large concepts and big ones. So they tend to lack humility, and they tend to be selfish. And this, even when they try to be open-minded, they're only open-minded in a material way. But they fail to see the spiritual side, which is the real issues, the real big picture of the part. That makes them narrow and small. And they lack humility when they get to the bigger things. They don't have humility. Well, I'm right, you're wrong. There's no God, so there's no sense in even discussing it. And you can see how it works. It limits you to the most smallest part of our universe, right here, the material world. And it limits you from being able to get to the bigger answers. Many of those people don't listen to this show because it just confuses them and or they grossly disagree with them. And it may even make them upset, angry. All right, so for developing humility, we've got to accept there's a part of us that is not humble, and rather has a kind of, we'll call it, stubbornness, and wants to ignore the humility so that it can get and be the thing it wants in the physical world. That's our personality, our subconscious. And we do this all day long. It's almost like we're practicing every day we live to become more and more selfish. And it takes a great effort to reverse this, we'll call it, mental position. So the first part of developing humility is to develop enough will, which is the consistency of our choices, to overcome this urge to look like we always know what we always know what we're talking about. We're more right than most other people most of the time. That position is a position of narrow-mindedness, and it will not lead back to our soul. It will lead us away from our soul, and it will ruin our ability in this particular life, while we're here in the physical realm, to create the most of God that our soul would like us to do. So this is probably the hardest thing to do then, because so many people don't do it. All right. Some other factors before we get into the specifics, which will be after the break. Some other factors that I think are relevant to defining humility is that how we're brought up has a lot to do with whether or not we're humble. Personalities, as they are developing, do best when they're given freedom to think and freedom to make mistakes. When the personality becomes fearful of making mistakes, it also develops a tendency towards egotism. In addition, personalities need to be encouraged to be creative of light. Not just creative, but creative of light. During the formative years are before the personality, which is 10 years old. And it also needs to have we'll call it special relationship in a spiritual sense with its creator or God. When those things are present, everything I just said, the personality has the best chance to avoid disorder in itself and a fight with its own soul, and it will not be as egotistical or arrogant. And it will turn out to be, in its adult life, a much more humble adult. The majority of people are not raised in this way. Some are raised with God, but unfortunately with a God that is intolerant to being creative or intolerant to making mistakes. Some are raised without God, of course. And some are raised in ways in which the most important thing is to be right in knowledge that is in some way pre-thought, pre-done, and can be literally evaluated by its adherence to a certain line of thinking. So people become intolerant because of the fear of quote-unquote making mistakes, to challenging the world mentally around them, because they are, instead of being trained or educated to think on their own and to come up with their own answers, they are done, the opposite is done. They're taught to think as they're told to and to regurgitate answers that people who are much more limited in the way they function, think. This is a serious problem, and we will discuss that along with many other things in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlouer.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight's show is dealing with developing humility, the path for being our soul. And hopefully I covered enough in the first part of the show so that all of you out there, or most of you out there, have a good understanding of what humility is and why it's so difficult to develop it. I don't want to discourage anyone by what I said, because the rest of the show is going to be about how to do it. So don't think, well, gee, it's so hard, I don't know if I can do that. Well, millions of people are doing it as I speak. So it isn't like it's super hard, but it isn't easy, because the part of us that has to change, well, it's two parts actually, is by their nature relatively selfish, meaning that they're in illusion. And consequently, our subconscious wants to over-control, and our self is reluctant, fearful to interfere. So you have to kind of become a little less fearful, so the self is able to take a stronger position in our development, and I'll tell you how that works. And the soul has to be willing to become closer with this nebulous being, the soul, and the personality, you know, says, gee, I got to get together with that soul, the thing that wants to make me do things I don't want to do. And that's kind of like the foundation of the resistance. There are ways of getting over these problems. And you can't just say, I'm going to do it. So let's start with that. I said there is a necessity for will, which is a consistency of choice. But you can't just use will, because will alone isn't sufficient after a while. You can use it for minutes, maybe an hour or two. But before long, we get tired of using only will to achieve the result, and our will fails, the consistency of choice fails, because there are so many distracting elements to being more conscious than we're used to, and we fall back to the old ways of doing it, which is to allow our subconscious or personality to take the lead and do most of the, we'll say, work, which makes it feel easier for us and less threatening. Make sense? All right, so what are some of the other parts of this besides the will, which is so relatively simple, but doesn't work most of the time. The other parts are the following. The first is that you need to love something greater than yourself. Or you won't develop humility. Loving something greater than yourself sounds like an easy thing. Well, I'll just get a dog, you know. You can love those. They're easy. They're kind of cute, you know. Believe it or not, even a dog helps you if you really love it greater than yourself. That's the ticket. Most people love their pets, but not greater than themselves. And most people love their children, but oddly, not greater than themselves, especially men, by the way. And most people, and this gets really difficult to understand, love their spouses, but not greater than themselves. Now, a lot of people are probably going to be, you know, right now say, oh, that ain't true. I love my spouse greater than myself. Yeah, that's the politically correct statement, maybe. But it isn't the truth. And the way you know you love something greater than yourself is that you are humble with whatever or whoever you love more than yourself, and you're never arrogant with anybody, and especially not with those that you love greater than yourself. So it's a big deal. Arrogant people usually love no one greater than themselves, and so if you're arrogant, it's a blanket statement. If you're not arrogant and you're just egotistical, hopefully most people are in that position, then you may sometimes love a few people greater than yourself, but not consistently enough to say that you do in general. So, and a lot of people are in that position. But you've got to be in a position where you love someone all the time greater than yourself. And that's the most difficult position to be in. I'm going to tell you that there is a secret of who and what to love greater than yourself that solves the whole problem. You don't have to make a laundry list of people and then try to find those that you can actually love greater than yourself. Because you're always going to have, if you do that, the following problem in the egotistical mind. And that is, no one will ever come up to your standard greater than yourself. You're always going to believe you're more right than others are. You're always going to believe that you're more everything in many respects than others are. And you'll only, at times, when enamored in a certain situation or circumstance, believe anybody is in a position greater than yourself. That sounds weird, doesn't it? But it's the truth. The truth, as far as I understand it, and again, you need to check this out for yourself. Okay? So, what is the secret then? What gets us through all of this Mickey Mouse? Because are we really going to get laundry lists and try to really fight our way up and down the list, trying to find someone under some circumstances that we love greater than ourselves and then try to make them someone we're going to love always greater than ourselves? No. The best answer for this equation is to love God and your soul, they're kind of synonymous, greater than yourself. Now, this is a hard, hard thing to construe. Most people will say, well, I'll pick the soul because the soul is like me, right? Isn't it? I love my soul greater than myself. All right. That's fine. I don't mind that. That's okay. You can substitute the soul for God. But there's a real problem, though, because the soul seeks to love or give wisely to others always more than it seeks to give or do so to itself. So if you love the soul more than yourself, that means you love giving to others in a wise way, which means that it helps them to do the same, more than you love giving to yourself. That's the ticket. That is the answer to that particular quagmire of a problem that we all tend to have. And you get through this by, whenever faced with an issue of lacking love wisdom, it's called, wise loving, that you put yourself in the position or thought process of the soul rather than of your lower self. Now, for some people, this doesn't make a lot of sense because they say, well, I don't know what my soul wants. I don't know what it is. But you don't have to. All you need to do is you need to say that my primary goal, the thing that I'm willing myself to do, isn't to stop being egotistical, it's to become as wisely giving to others, giving in to others in ways that helps them to do the same. Become wise givers. That's all I've got to do, and then I love my soul more than myself and my personality. And I know that this is a tough one because most people haven't challenged themselves to attempt to do this on a daily basis. If you do, you will start developing humility. But you've got to do what I say. So when someone challenges you, your job is to try to give to them in whatever way will help them to become more giving to others. That's your job. That's your primary existence is about doing that. And then your primary existence is about loving your own soul or God. And it doesn't matter if you say it in terms of God or your soul, or if you say, well, I want to talk about it in terms of my soul or angel. That's fine. I don't care. That's all right. Monad, you want to be the monad? It's all the same thing. As far as God's picture, the whole way it seeks to express itself, it does so through all those great beings. And any of them are so much greater in consciousness than a human being that it doesn't matter. Yeah, some might be greater than one or another, but to us, they are also vastly greater. Any one of them is fine. So the path for being our soul involves agreement to give as our soul. Do you see what I'm saying? The path for being our soul is an agreement from our conscious self to exist as a giving being like our soul. When that takes place, the personality, which can be really stickler about not wanting to do this, has no choice but to become a part of the soul. And you could say, well, why does it have no choice? Well, a unique kind of thing happens. I'm going to try to explain it so that you can follow it, I hope. When you do this little exercise, it's not such a little exercise, maybe it's a huge exercise for some people, but when you do this exercise that I'm discussing now, each time that we choose, using our will, to follow this design of creating love wisdom, that's what we're doing, by helping others to do the same, that's what we're attempting to do, we become more open-minded, and we force our personality to use our senses in a more conscious way. It brings consciousness into our centers, which is where the information is coming from, and it balances the senses of form, which is our five lower senses, with our two senses of spirit, or God's thought, or the two higher senses. It actually does all of that. And while it's doing that, our senses become connected in each body as we're doing it in different bodies for different purposes at each time. with our soul. They literally, with the thing called the Ad Karana, it's a very complicated way it's done, but the energies connect together. And so the soul and our bodies, the soul's body and our bodies, are becoming interconnected. And this is true of the solar angel, which is also connected to the soul. They're all getting connected together. Each time we follow this specific discipline or exercise in spiritual development. Now, I know a lot of people are going to doubt what I'm saying because they may have never tried this before, or a few of you may have, and you've already been taught this by either me or someone else, and you say, well, it didn't work because I didn't do it. I did it for 2 seconds on a week ago Thursday. You know, that's the kind of attitude of someone who is basically egotistical and doesn't want to do it, but wants to say that they tried and it doesn't work. But if you get beyond that particular position, because you will most likely fail, it's okay to fail because we're failing every day anyway. I mean, heck, if you're going to go ahead and fail every day, why not give this a try? Because some moments in some days you may succeed. That's better than having 100% failure rate, right? And accept that you're not going to be 100% succeeding in this because the 100% level means that you are fully a soul, and I don't think there's anybody I know that's a human being who's walking around saying, I'm fully a soul. Other than the ones who are so deluded, and maybe they went to the Bahamas or something to get paid $1,500 to become some great being or something. I mean, they actually have these. You can go on the internet and pay them without even traveling if you want. But, I mean, the thing is that the reality is, if you really want to become your soul, you need to do it from this side of the fence. Because the soul can't do it. It's someplace else, and it's the lower is controlling. That's us. The only way to do this is to do it from the position of us, the human being. And the fun part about it is that even though there's failures, there are successes. And in the little bit of time that people do succeed, usually at the beginning, it puts a big smile on your face. Because you say, you know, maybe that guy on the radio is not so crazy. This has some of the things he's talking about. I can tell it's really doing this. And so, you know, I'm trying to start off with the very basics. Granted, the basics are sometimes the most difficult to deal with. And for people who are arrogant, this is going to be a real challenge. I mean, I don't know if too many people who are arrogant actually are listening. But if you have listened this far and you conclude you are arrogant because you don't really love anybody, not even more than yourself, you just don't love anybody, well, then you've got a real challenge. But it's possible still to achieve the results I'm suggesting. It really is. You can get over. All right, so here we are with the first part of our journey, so to speak, that there is a very fundamental way to develop humility, and it comes through a thing called wise giving or love wisdom. And it provides a new sense to a person once it's developed. It's a sense of joining together all of our senses in all three of our bodies eventually. There are some other methods. One of them was a thing called synthetic yoga. Now, why doesn't that work with most people these days? Because you have to develop some love wisdom first. You have to discipline the astral body and the etheric physical bodies first before you use it. And so I don't teach it to people because the tendency is for people to try to use it without those first steps. steps. And when they do, they actually harm their mental body rather than improve it. And they can become more egotistical and or arrogant and more argumentative. You know, huge problems can arise. So it sort of has a negative side. If someone is regulating the situation outside of the person doing it, and they say, well, you got to do this more, you got to discipline this more, some people may be amenable to it. But for the most part, it's too soon for its use for most people. Eventually, humanity will become more humble, and things like synthetic yoga will then further advance their humility and improve their mental senses vastly. But that is sometime in the future. Okay, so here is another side to trying to develop humility. Most people want to defend their sense of self, or their selves, they would say, when confronted with a position of being incorrect, especially mentally. They're more likely to admit to a mistake they made physically and sometimes astrally than a mental mistake. That's true of all of humanity in general. Specific people may be somewhat different from that general statement, but that's pretty much the average. The mental side, then, is where humility has the most problem. And to make it even worse, the astral side in some people, the majority, almost all, actually, is very dominant over the mental side. So people think of how they feel first, and then tend to think of the logical and comprehensively, we'll say, full concept or why of something, so that they can determine truth. They determine truth first by how they feel. Well, it colors their whole logic system in a color that's the lower part of the mind, and it colors their higher conceptual thinking, resulting in virtually most of their thought being untrue. Now, how do you struggle against that? Well, common monastic thought is something humans have been, we'll say, saddled with. It's like spiritually, genetically part of us at the present time. And we have to undo that by creating a new sense of self that no longer requires for it to feel okay about itself to be right and to feel good about its own thinking. And that's just part of the problem. Also, that it feels good about what feelings it has in general, besides how it thinks. So the detachment of common monastic thought also does a very good thing. It prevents people from being fooled by evil. Evil uses the common monastic connection of thought to fool us into thinking what is good is bad and what is bad is good. And because we don't think well enough, because we're egotistical, and because we have so many glamours or desires about how we feel, it's easy to be fooled. No, that's not a good thing. How do you get around all that stuff? Well, this is where we get into the contemplation and reflection elements of ourselves. People need time away from direct interactions to develop humility in many circumstances. We are too prone to the moment of being confronted with our own selfishness from the common monastic connection to deal with it at the time in the beginning of our spiritual disciplines. Instead, we, in those situations, become defensive and argumentative, and prevent ourselves from being humble. So, the answer is that after we do such things, we reflect on it, admit to ourselves that we were egotistical and possibly kama-manasically connected, and break apart the kama-manasic by saying, okay, what are the desires I wish to have? Maybe I want to look better. I want other people to respect who I am, to think good about me. I want control and power over them. I want them to know that I am the person that's special. All those things may be part of a person's feeling nature. And give that up. You've got to give it up in your reflection. This is a state of meditation. And then see yourself in a contemplative role doing something different, saying, huh, you know what? You're right. I am desiring to be the boss and control things. I'm desiring to be right about everything and not make any mistakes and for other people not to be not as smart as me, not as aware as I am and everything else. All that, if you admit to these things, then you can reconstruct those tainted, bad behaviors and thought processes and see them in a way in which you're being humble. You have humility. You accept the rightness of others' thoughts, and you accept that you're wrong. And no matter how much you say, well, I can't really be wrong because I know this or that, now you don't know anything. Only thing you have is a bunch of illusions. So you say, yeah, I'm going to accept as truth these other things and test them, as we talked about, by seeing how big the concept is they represent. Does it explain why it's really happening? And can you throw examples at it that confirm it? And is your thinking destroyed by the same thing? You're thinking, well, if you throw 10 other new examples at it, my thinking is all goofy. I've just been cutting it down so that I don't see the truth. I try to tailor my examples of challenging my concepts by just limiting my thinking. That's an egotism. It's self-protecting. That's one of the reasons it's so successful in humanity to take us over as a faulty way of us mentally thinking. So we need to use this meditative procedure, especially after the fact, because during the moment is the most difficult time to achieve humility. That's not to say you shouldn't do it at the moment, we'll get into that, but for right now, we need to accept that most of the time we will fail at being humble at the moment. Now, once we come to the conclusions what I've said and we have reflected and contemplated, then we have to take action. The action is in asserting our incorrectness to those who we have been lacking in humility to, and we have been egotistical and or arrogant to, and we not only need to assert, tell them we were wrong, we have to show gratitude to them that they are correct, and that we appreciate them for helping us to see that. We believe in our hearts and minds that what they said was for our own benefit, just as we're trying to now give back by being grateful. Now, grateful isn't saying, oh, you are a god, oh, master, and I will follow your ways. Gratitude is, oh, you're acting more as a soul than me, and by doing so, you've exemplified that to me, and thank you so for being more soul than I was at that time. And that gives back to them the state and reinforces in them of continuing to be a soul. When you argue, and you say, no, you're wrong, I'm right, and I'm always right, and you don't know what you're talking about, and you make up all the reasons and bullshit why. It turns out it's not really that, is it? It turns out that it actually is a circumstance in which you are seeking to control and to get your own needs met, and you don't love them. But if you see them as a soul, if we go back to the first operational definition, you see them as a soul, then gratitude shows that you're seeing them as a soul. And then that makes it easier for them in the future to continue to do that. If you argue, you're basically trying to prevent them from being a soul. You're acting in a dark way. If you're in some kind of spiritual group kind of thing, this is a very bad position to be in. Very bad. And you should correct it, because it is destructive to the very nature of what spiritual groups are about. It's spiritual groups are just about people trying to be their soul, right? That's what it's really about. It's not about, them having power or control or any of that stuff. It's about being their higher self in the face of many difficult challenges, etc. Gratitude is something that is left out of many textbooks and other teachings on the subject that we're dealing with, humility. And if you don't have gratitude, ultimately you won't maintain humility. So this is a big part of the overall picture. There's so many people that abuse some of the ideas that I've been teaching so far because they go halfway with them, and they never show gratitude in the end of the game. Or they may even apologize. I was really sorry. I was being kind of a doofus in what I said. I'm a turkey. But they won't go so far as to say, thank you for all that you've done in helping me to be more humble. Those that do that, I note them as the special folks who are moving ahead in developing humility. It's tough to do for some reason for human beings, because although they can admit mistakes, they hate at the same time agreeing that someone is in the top position, so to speak, in a spiritual sense. It's the real can of worms. And without it, even though you can make all the negative assertions about, I'm really screwed up, I really mean, it doesn't, that is the first part, you got to do that. But it doesn't complete the cycle. It doesn't solve the equation of humility. And the result will be you'll slip back away from a humble position. And sometimes you'll do it within the next 5 minutes. So gratitude is critical when making negative assertions about yourself, as well as when even contemplating and reflecting in a meditative state. You've got to go through with the gratitude at the same time to ensure that when presented with the opportunity for communication with others, you will actually do it. Okay, so we're getting some basics here. We're finding out that there are some places where you can do some things that actually will improve your humility, and it is effective as tools, we'll say. What about people who are egotistical and lack humility, but insist that they are not doing that? What can you do with those kinds of people? Well, I kind of said where my position is about that. Generally, they are to be ignored. Because the one thing that the personality finds intractable to its beingness is being ignored. Now, a lot of people think it's a conscious issue. So it's about yourself, right? Selves don't like to be ignored either, right? But it's kind of weird. The self has the ability to prevent being ignored. But the personality, because it is subconscious, can do some things. But those things are not very effective. They usually drive people further away from it. So it doesn't lead to the to what it is seeking to achieve, which is to be noticed. Why is it so important for us to be noticed? Being noticed is a state of what we'll call it reinforcement that the purpose of our existence is real. We have some real reason for being here. So being noticed is extremely important because when you are ignored, your reason for being, your purpose, becomes diminished, no matter what you think your purpose is. And although it is a test for advanced initiates, they're the only people I know that are actually tested in this way. They're deliberately put in a position in life where they will be ignored by vast numbers of people to see if they can continue on the spiritual path and their mission and do their challenging work in a spiritual sense. Then they have to realize that God and their soul is noticing them, and other souls are noticing them, even though other humans may ignore them. That's okay for them. But for most people, outside of those few, it's intolerable. And the personality needs to be noticed, constant given of attention, or it tends to rebel, act out, become a bad person of sorts, because others haven't noticed. And you see this in children, where people around the child are not noticing. The child will act out. But I'm talking more about adults now. So you could say, well, then why would you want to ignore someone who's being egotistical? Because the personality has very little it can do in the adult world to achieve a better outcome. And eventually it gets worried and threatened and will relinquish its over-controlling nature to its lower self that will then have maybe the opportunity to make some changes in gaining at least some measure of humility. So in a spiritual teaching sense, if you want someone to improve their humility and gratitude, the best thing to do is to ignore them. And I don't mean ignore them by saying, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. No, don't tell them that. Just ignore them. And, you know, it's a very effective tool. My teacher, long ago, explained that this is what he does. So I said, well, I kind of got that message already because I found that out quickly. But the thing is that it is so effective that it is more effective than anything else you can say or do. And particularly if it is true that you're not as egotistical and that you are actually trying to serve the other person and the things you've said or done are both less egotistical and more filled with love, wisdom. then it really gets to the other person. And so if someone says, well, they write you a bunch of letters or emails or something, and they tell you all the things that they're right about and you're wrong about, nobody knows what they're talking about except them, and blah, blah, blah. Don't answer. Don't communicate. Say nothing. And just smile and wait and see what happens. Do a lot more good that way than to try to get into some debate about the situation. That does nothing, but it builds the resistance in the personality of the person. You can't convince them that you're right and they're wrong. You can't make someone humble. Humility comes from someone wanting to be their soul. And people want to be their soul when their personality has virtually given up because it can't succeed in its overbearing nature. It finally reaches its dead end and it says, this is just not working. Self, you try it. I can't get anywhere. And we're both suffering from... Well, the personality doesn't really suffer, but it does in a sense because it wants itself to remain at least as big and as good as it was, and the self shrinks every time it is ignored. I said it had something to do with the self. The self shrinks, but the personality starts to become worried. Like, uh-oh, I need that self sometimes, and it's shrinking. And if everybody ignores myself, you know what? This isn't going to go so well. Now, I realize that each of us is only one person, maybe in another person's life, but if a few people in that person's life start ignoring him, it's pretty effective. Or if one person that they really respect on some level ignores them, it's quite effective. Someone who's special to them or that feels important to them, that can be very effective. I know some people think that's cruel. Well, that's mean. Why would you even do that? I just explain why. I'm trying to help someone become their soul. Have a personality may not like me. Even the lower self may not. But because when a self shrinks, it does suffer. So the person experiences suffering, or they write a bunch of emails, they get no response, they suffer. There's no question of that. And the personality worries because, well, I can't be in control of anything if nobody responds to me, right? So you can see its dilemma. And it's not in control of itself anymore either because the self is shrinking every time it does something. The person in the self as a person in total does something and gets a response. It really shrinks every time. The more energy it puts out to get noticed and the less it gets a response, boom, that works. Now, can this work on children? Yes, but remember, it's very brutal. And you don't want to use it as the only alternative on methodology with children because it is so powerful. Use it judiciously. When the child is wanting to be taught or have a greater understanding, open up and do that. Children will do that, and you can reason with them in a sense. It's harder to do that with someone who's arrogant or at least even egotistical because they won't operate on that level. But children will because they need their parents or whoever is their guardian at the time. And so they will respond, and you can get away with it pretty well. Once in a while, when the child is very resistant, the ignoring thing is quite effective. Sometimes you have to literally confine them and ignore them. That works real good. Because then they can't go out and do anything, and you're ignoring them. So it is, it's a brutal thing. And be careful because you don't want to do it every day because then you're going to harm their emerging self because you're diminishing it too much. But this is an effective tool. I have found that it is extremely appropriate and useful with people who have serious problems of humility and no gratitude and the whole thing. It works. I do it all the time. A lot of different people. Now, does this mean that this is the answer in every situation. No, there, like I said, there are times when, even with adults, you don't want to use this. There are times when there are other more appropriate things to do. That's part of love wisdom. You got to know how to give wisely. Giving, you know, when you ignore people, is a good thing for some people and sometimes, and other ways may be effective in other ways, other times. It really depends. But nonetheless, it's a great tool. All right. And remember, the motive for doing anything I say tonight must be to help somebody to develop humility and gratitude, not to punish them, not to get back at them, not to make them feel miserable. If that's your motive, the motive in itself will defeat the purpose at hand. Now you can say, well, how would they know the difference? Well, believe it or not, motive eventually comes out, and others do know the difference. So don't think you can fool fools, because you're trying to develop humility in people, not make them more slippery than you are in hiding bad motives. Because that's what you'll teach them, how to hide bad motives rather than to be humble. So you won't achieve any good results. You'll achieve some very negative results, both in yourself and those you're supposedly trying to serve, because you have the wrong motive. So be careful about that. Of what I said, you need to love soul, God, more than yourself. Not say, well, gee, I'm going to just get out even with other people, because that may torture them by ignoring them. Is that loving others more than yourself? No. Other souls. You just love who you are. And this is a little trick you learn, so you can try using it whenever you don't like somebody. That's not the purpose here. All right. All right. So we talked a little bit about children. Let's get into that part of it, because I really think that humility is best developed when people are young, and gratitude, rather than trying to do the remedial work, which is so often the case these days particularly, because you first have to undo all the crap that's sitting around festering. I mean, really. And that's the problem. We've got all that happening, right? Wouldn't it be better to just get at the basis of development when it's starting and help someone to become more their soul through their formative years, instead of saying, oh, well, now they're 25 years old, then we better... Now, come on. Years and years to undo all the problems. And you remember, you're probably never going to get to where you could have if you just started in the beginning. So this is where education and family life become unified in an approach of developing humility. Let me talk about schools for a bit. When we attend a school, the school's position should be the following, that it is first there to help us as spiritual beings, and then secondly, as human beings, and then thirdly, as a societal structure of building a better world or country or society that the schools are in. In that order, in that level of importance. How is it presently? Well, presently, it's the reverse. So, and some schools, the first is completely absent. Then you're really getting into like communism and rules for radical development of people who are trying to control everybody else. People who are over-controlled become over-controlling. Children learn what they live, not what they're taught. schools are controlling them, they will become over-controlling. So a school needs to foster free thinking and allow those children who can and choose to understand the spiritual nature of life, God will call it, without having to teach religion per se, that there's something special about life, and life has its unique qualities. And you could go so far, in my school I would, saying that life is God's growth. But some schools would say, well, it's religion. No reason you can't teach about religion in school. You just have to allow people to think about what religion, if any, they're going to choose to have. Open-mindedness is the key to development. You have to allow children to be able to think. They will by nature think if they're allowed to. But they need to be encouraged as well by not restricting their thought to some preconceived thought that, quote-unquote, is their lesson plan or is the knowledge in a specific book they're reading. All information and all knowledge that is developed from it needs to be challenged by big concepts to see whether or not it holds itself out to be true. So when it's a class, this is what I'm suggesting now, school would be like, a class is being taught about a whole series of facts, supposedly. Then you stop teaching them what the facts are after a period of time, maybe 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever, and say, now let's go over and see how this develops into concepts and whether these concepts are supportive of all the facts that we know. Or are there some things that contradict it? Can you come up with some ideas, some things that you see that don't fit those facts? And can you say, well, wait a second, maybe the concept we're using isn't right. And maybe they're not really facts. Maybe they are examples, but not facts that support the concept that we are challenging. And you let people discuss it and argue about it freely. And there are no right or wrong answers. It's just questions that people delve into. Teaching people critical thinking, which is what I'm talking about, is allowing them to do it, because by nature, the human being, having a soul, allows them to be creative and to have critical thinking thought because they have a whole developed conceptual mind, which goes all the way to their soul, which is part of it. It allows them to become greater. That's spiritual teaching. You don't have to call it that if you don't want, but it is a spiritual teacher of a sort that would do that, because they understand that that's more important than the quote-unquote information that is so often demanded that children rote-wise learn and then spill back in some testing fashion. That is poor education, and it's anti-thinking. Okay. That being the case, when you learn things by the conceptual framework model, which is what I'm suggesting, you also learn eventually about God, because the bigger concepts always involve something bigger than the physical, direct experience world. And although you don't have to say God absolutely is this, and everybody has to march in order to that, you allow people to discuss, is there some part of this that looks like a higher being could be involved? Doesn't have to be, but is there? This allows people to become open to their souls, and remember, humility comes from believing that there's something greater than themselves, right? Isn't that what we started with? You got to have that available, otherwise you don't have humility. And is there any doubt, then, that in these modern societies, like here in the United States, the schools that so often nowadays push all spiritual teaching out are bringing people into a world where they're egotistical because of their teaching methods. And the teachers themselves are egotistical. Wow. And the school system is egotistical. The school board, the principal, everybody, egotistical. Like a disease. So it's very important that the education be handled in this, we'll call it, open-minded way. And we don't have very much of it. There are some schools, you know, that exist in some states. They call them, some places they call them preschools, other places they call them charter schools. It doesn't really matter what the name is. It just allows children to do this. Some schools in that category do, but some others are just copies of the general public school system, and they're not really any better or different. They just have to call themselves something different. But the most important element here is that the parents choose that their children attend schools that are open-minded. You see how this fits in with the family. If your family doesn't run this way, sending your kid to a school that does is going to be in contradiction to the family and will confuse them and lead to problems. But the reverse is also true, and this is the real terrible problem, is that some people live in places where they can't go to free schools or charter schools, and they have only the public school, which oftentimes is very rigid, and it's about learning rote things, and terrible. Their family might be more open-minded. They may be very spiritual, but they send their kids to these other lousy kind of schools, and the results are bad. What happens? Well, the children hate going to school. They rebel against it, and then sometimes they also rebel against their families because they're being forced to spend most of their day in an environment that is teaching them anti-God, anti-soul, non-humility, and egotism and arrogance, possibly. And they come home to a family that is so counter to what they're being taught, and the family is constantly telling them, well, you've got to get an education, you've got to be good at doing what they do in school, but what they do in school is countering the very nature of what the family is. Now tell me that isn't crazy, and then the family says, well, what's wrong with my kid? Children learn what they live. And you can't teach them to be humble. You can only help them to be open-minded and to find humility as it is practiced in the family, and it needs to be reinforced in the school. Don't send your children to a school that is the antithesis of your belief system or your family. If you have to move to someplace else, wherever that else is, to get away from that kind of dictatorial thinking that is destructive to both the self and to the soul. What could be more important? People say, well, I can't afford it. I can't afford to put my kid in a private school, and there are no public schools available. Well, or if you live in Germany, it's illegal. You got to go to a public school. I just heard of that on the news. Well, heck, I'd find some way out of that. I don't care what it is. The interesting part about this is that the forces of evil, of darkness, are growing, and they're taking away our freedom. If you want to be free, you have to fight for it. And I mean fight. There's no way around it anymore. And it's going to be worse before it's better. And if you don't believe it exists, it's going to swallow you whole and your children. All right, so the family structure has to coincide with the educational system. And you need to be particularly cautious about the need for other adults to control your children. You shouldn't be controlling them. Don't let other adults to stand in and be some kind of monstrous, egotistical person. The people you want to be interacting with your children, adults and children, should be humble. Pick can choose where you live and who you associate with. Now, does this sound terrible that I'm saying this, that the humble should associate with humble people? Yes, because as I said, in some respects, if someone is really egotistical, ignoring them can be an effective tool. But besides that, you can serve them as well. You can serve them in other ways. You don't always ignore them. But you ignore them at times, and you serve them at times, but you don't have to say, well, here, take care of my children, who are very vulnerable. Absolutely not. Think of children as being like little souls that you're in charge of, attempting to become more of a soul. And that's where you have to think of them as being definitely more important than yourself. When someone says, well, I can't afford it because my, you know, this or that, first thing comes to my mind, I swear, this is the first thought, and every time I hear that, I hear it sometimes frequently. Well, you son of a gun. You're just more selfish. And you care more about yourself than you do about your children. Because if you did, you would make it so that your child is growing up to become a soul and is humble and is grateful and is light. Yeah. All right. So here we have maybe some contentious issues, I could say. There's a lot of people that will disagree with my position about what I'm saying. That's okay. And I'm more than willing to listen to someone else's quote-unquote ideas and arguments that fall onto the other side. That's being humble. Right? At the same time, until I know better, knowing means that it has proven to be accurate, I will live my life through the ideas or principles of angels' wisdom, because so far they have worked in the situations I've tested them, and I haven't heard of challenging ideas that I have done otherwise. Rather, I've seen the reverse. The reverse of angels' wisdom, which is tyranny and evil, darkness and all this stuff I've explained, all it does is lead to suffering and destruction. And there's plenty of examples of that. And it's happening, even as I speak. So it's more than obvious to me, but it's not to everybody, obviously. True. All right. So what else can we do in terms of young people to improve this idea of humility? Well, part of this aspect involves some element of spiritual discipline. Children cannot spiritually discipline themselves mentally very effectively, but they can, to some extent, do it fairly effectively physically and astrally. So they should be given many responsibilities of serving others, to help others become souls, through their physical and astral nature. That's fine. And gradually, as they grow older, more mentally. This is the principal way to get people to become more humble. And even with adults, if you're just starting out with adults, you always start with their physical nature. Have them do physical things that allows them to be of service for others who may be doing even more mental things. That's okay. Because when you're remedial, which most people, once they reach adulthood, who are trying to spiritually discipline themselves, they haven't done it before, that's a remedial position. You've got to start like with their children. Because otherwise the personality is still going to be in a rebellion and you're going to still be dealing with the same issues you might in a younger person, but it's more resistant to change. The person has already developed significant levels of egotism. And so the senses are really damaged, and there's a whole bunch of other failing kind of behaviors that have become manifested. So So it is not the easiest thing in the world to be able to change this. And it can lead to years of frustration, but it's part of the process. In children, it's better because you can do it earlier. It's okay for every day a child to do things that require physical discipline for spiritual reasons. Every day. It's okay for them to do things astrally in discipline, which shows love and empathy every day. The development of empathy is very big, especially in children at 7 and beyond. It's a huge thing. But empathy can start being developed at about 3.5. I mean, it could be significantly developed from 3.5 to 5. So you don't have to start late, you start early. Now, why can't a 2.5-year-old be empathic? They can develop a little tiny bit of empathy, something on the order of where maybe a pet might have. But they can't develop much more than that because so much of their attention of their nature, which is their personality, is being focused on the physical things. They need to become more adept with their physical senses and their physical abilities before they focus too much on their astral nature. So that's the period of time when they're gaining in that respect. And that's true all the way up to 7 years old or so. So you've got to only develop as much as the child can manage. And you can't interfere with physical development just to develop astral issues at too young an age, because then the physical side will diminish in its capacity. The person will be less coordinated. They'll have more trouble having good physical sense. So they'll have more accidents. They'll have trouble achieving certain physical things that they want to do, and they need to be able to ride a bicycle, maybe walk away, maybe climb stairs, maybe be able to avoid certain kinds of physical dangers and things. All of that is required to be alive and healthy, and so those should not be interfered with by too early trying to demand that children develop things they're not really ready to develop. They can develop physical humility. Physical humility was, oh, I made a boo-boo, I fell down, oh, I didn't see this and I ran into it, or I failed to hold the glass and it slipped out of my hand and broke. Okay, those kinds of humilities are crucial, and some children don't develop them, believe it or not, because their parents don't know how to foster humility. When the child drops the glass, its first thought should be, oh, gee, not I'm stupid and I did a terrible thing, but, oh, gee, I'm going to need help in cleaning this up. I'm so sorry that I need to call mommy or daddy or sister and brother and come over and help because I'm only 3 years old and it's too dangerous for me to be just getting the glass up myself. I can maybe learn how to do it and watch them and maybe participate a little bit. I'll hold a dustpan when they sweep it in. But you see, it is the humility is in understanding that how they help someone else to even correct the problem they created is a part of the humility. And then the gratitude. Oh, thank you, Mommy, for being helpful. I made a mistake, I dropped the glass, but thank you so much for being helpful. I really feel much better that you were, and that really helped me. That position in a young person is like gold, and it doesn't take that many incidences for it to manifest. You see how mistakes are really helpful if they're handled correctly. They're necessary. If we really live in such a perfect environment, if you want to call it perfect, that nothing can ever be broken or mishandled or whatever, we may not develop humility. We have to challenge ourselves and make mistakes, push ourselves beyond our limits at the time, so that we can develop humility and then gratitude. for others helping us. It's not that hard to understand this. I don't know why so many parents I see don't get it when their children do this sort of stuff. And instead, why did you drop that? You're just terrible. Get out of my sight. How do I have to clean it up? Oh, no. Instead of, oh, drop the glass. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll show you how it can be cleaned up, but you shouldn't do it right now, because if you didn't have the ability to hold on to it, cleaning it up is more challenging. It has greater danger once it breaks. So therefore, you can assist only at this level, and I'll show you. Oh, what a difference that is, huh? And I love you. I love you because you're just fine, you're learning things, and you're going to make mistakes like this. That's part of being who you are. And if the child doesn't say thank you, say, now you need to give me something for being of help to you. But you don't give it to me, you're giving it to the part that we share. We each have a soul. Your soul's going to give something to my soul. What is that, Mom? Say thank you. Tell me how you feel, how it made you feel better to have someone like me to help you clean this up and protect you and to make you feel like you're a good person. Oh, yes, yes, I do feel that, yes. Thank you, Mom. You see, these things are very basic and they don't take a lot. They actually are much better for the person who's the parent than screaming and yelling and, oh, the glass is broken. Instead, let's do this. Now, I want to move ahead to the point, well, what if a person is an adult and they're dropping the glasses? Then you have a remedial issue. The remedial issue is that you have to teach the person from a more adult standpoint. It's still kind of the same thing, but not. Because here the adult does have the sense that it's got to be cleaned up, but you have to remind them that it has to be done in a way in which there is no more glass left on the floor, and they have to be very careful, and they have to be concerned about the harm it may cause others. The 2.5-year-old is not going to be, that's not the time to understand that. It's a mental thing that they're not ready for to completely get grasped. But the adult is, and they may not be grasping that. So you watch them, and if they say they don't, half the glass is still all over the floor, even if it's supposedly cleaned up, say, wait a second, this is dangerous. You need to be more thorough and care about the harm it may cause others. And be more aware, both in your senses, and want to discipline your senses enough so that you won't cause harm to others. This is the part of the remedial discipline in the spiritual sense that happens in adulthood that you don't need to apply to children. And it won't work anyway with children because they don't have a full grasp of it yet. But it is critical to recognize that there are so many of these, and I'm using very simple things here, but there's so many of these kinds of instances in both the child's life and eventually in the adult life, but it's handled in very different ways, to change a person from being egotistical and uncaring, possibly unloving, then there's the arrogance issue, to becoming humble and grateful. It's an amazing thing. And remember this, it's not completed with either the child or in a remedial sense with the adult until there is gratitude expressed. Once you use these methods, you will see an immediate difference in the development of especially children, because they do change rapidly. And if you're going to put your child in an environment like a school, I don't don't care where it is, day camp, it doesn't matter, that uses a similar kind of methodology, then you're going to get extremely good results. And if you put them in an environment that is the antithesis of it, you're going to get extremely bad results. So be aware. Most of the time when I hear about kids, when I was in practice, I heard so many times I'd see a child in my practice, and then I'd talk to their parent. And so many times I would hear, well, I sent him here, or I sent her there, and they went to this club, or they went to this camp, or they went to this school, and they just had a terrible time and they hated it. And invariably, it was because the school was out of sync with the family, and or the child was already developing high levels of selfishness from being raised in the wrong environment. So this can be solved, of course, but the family has to be structured in a way which is spiritually on track, that is attuned to doing the right thing to develop humility. Humility can start at the youngest of ages. And the earlier it starts, the faster the child develops spiritually. The slower it is developed, the more difficult it is to change and becomes more remedial in its aspects in adulthood. You can track that. Just ask a bunch of people what their childhood was like, and you will see the outcome of that in chilling effects. Okay, so it is absolutely necessary to structure family and the outside family in ways that coincide and work together in tandem. The child may say, I hate this, I don't like going there, or whatever, but they can't explain what I'm explaining to you. And if they can, you're the child, and they're the adult, if they could. So this is what the basis needs to be, is use the spiritual model, and you've got yourself something that is going to be much more effective than any other quote-unquote behavioral psychology or humanistic psychology. Those things generally don't work because they leave out the spiritual side. It can help if you have a spiritual basis. There's some things in psychology that are effective, but only under the circumstances in which there truly is a spiritual basis for the circumstances, that you're trying to bring it all together at one time. And the first is that there will be humility and gratitude developed in those who you're helping, serving. Okay, let's move on to other ways of developing humility outside of family and education. Humility is a critical element to being successful in generating what we'll call time and energy efficiency, which when condensed becomes money. So most people don't know this. Most people think that money is made by working hard and getting along with other people. That's the models I've always seen touted by people who are big gurus, supposedly, in the business arena. And I can tell you that that's a false model, but I know that there's so much that has been, in an illusionary way, promoted about this, that a lot of people are going to scratch their head and say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with hard work and just getting along with everybody? Well, what really is successful in the world of making money, if you're concerned about that, and there's no reason not to be. Money is just a code for how efficient person is in using their time and energy. The more efficient you are, the more money you're going to be able to generate. And there's no reason that you shouldn't have money. Now, in general, there are some people, if you are in an unusual religious order or otherwise, that believe that having money is not what they particularly are focused in their life, and they actually they want to give it to others for various reasons. That's okay. I don't have a problem with that. This is the difference, though, of what I'm trying to say in this respect. If you want to be most successful in generating income, making a living, two things become critical, and the first is to be as creative as possible, while remaining humble. So in other words, you create the most efficient and practical ways possible in whatever you're doing, but you remain humble at the same time. So the more you create, the more mistakes you're going to make. So when you make mistakes, you're the first to admit it, the first to acknowledge it, and the first to try to improve upon it, while you also are grateful to others who bring or show you that you made a mistake and or give you some hints or improvements that you might be able to use. You see how that works. Now, for a lot of people, they think getting along with other people is just praising them and not getting into arguments with them. And I suggest that we reverse that and make it that besides being creative of your own, you do the best you can to help everybody else be as creative as possible. And when they make a mistake, you try to help them to improve without criticizing, being critical of their failure to succeed in a certain way. You could be critical in yourself, if you want to, about someone being egotistical or arrogant, and you could be critical, in a sense, in yourself, about them refusing to correct their mistakes. But it doesn't help much to try to bring that to their attention if they are egotistical or arrogant, because they won't hear you. But nonetheless, that's a different thing than what I'm saying. I'm suggesting here that you first try to help the person to correct mistake, and by helping them to see more creative ways than they saw themselves and how they can change without, you know, demeaning them by saying, oh, you're just stupid, you really just don't know what you're doing, so you can't do this. You know, no, this is the better way to do it. You choose this and this and this, and if you do these things, I think it might work. Let me show you and try it, and that sort of thing. So that's part of my model of how to make more money. And then at the same time, you show gratitude to everyone who in any way attempts to serve anyone else in a spiritual sense. Anyone. And you constantly express the gratitude you have. It doesn't have to be towards you. As a matter of fact, it's better when it's not. You show gratitude towards people. And when you do that, people will ultimately, most people will, find that they like you, even if they originally or initially did not. And in addition to that, because of your creations, you will make yourself valuable if you're an employee. If you're running a business, you'll make yourself valuable to your employees because you'll help them to become more creative rather than just robots and do what you want. And eventually you'll help them to think more, and they want to become creative and think more. But you also can insist on humility as much as possible if you're a boss. You can do it by telling people you're free to make mistakes, provided that you admit to when you make them. And if you don't admit to when you make them, you'll be told how to change and become better at them. And then you'll get more appreciation if you are grateful for your bosses or whoever is your supervisor. If you do that, then you'll become more recognized as being and rewarded for being a good employee. This is a different model than is proposed by work hard and get along with others. In some ways, you could say, well, it doesn't apply. You're still working hard. You're still trying to get along with others. But the model is more sophisticated and a lot more spiritual than the material elements that are usually the proponent aspects of work hard and get along with others. Now, why does this model work better? Well, it leads to people becoming more of a soul. It builds humility and gratitude, and it allows people to work for each other and with each other without there being the normal dissension between them. Why does it not work then all the time? And I will tell you it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't work all the time is that so many people are egotistical that the model only works when someone is less egotistical and more willing to be humble, then it will work. So you need, if you're in a business, you need to try to hire people who are open-minded. Easier said than done, I agree. But if you're going to follow the more difficult spiritual path, part of the humility of doing so is to sometimes hire not the person who can do the best job at the moment, but to hire the person who can grow the most into a soul in that job and will then do a greater job in the future. But most importantly, that they will have humility and gratitude. And if they don't have either of those, remember, without gratitude, the humility will fall apart, then the result, unfortunately, will be that employee will just not work out for a spiritual person or organization. It just won't. And they won't last very long in the job. Tough problems. Making money is a spiritual issue, as everything is. And it's an efficiency model. It requires that you use greater intelligence, in effect, so that there are fewer mistakes and more is done in the same period of time with greater levels of creativity taking place each step of the way. It is a model that, when you use the true soul kind of development, is the epitome of what we'll call capitalistic growth. It doesn't interfere and force people into a monopolistic position. And quite the opposite, it is anti-monopolistic because you're constantly trying to help others to be creative, which may mean they will leave your business and be competitors. But regardless, it is a means of helping people to become their souls, and it certainly develops humility and gratitude when that is the primary emphasis of what you're trying to do. Not everybody's going to understand it. You might go through a lot of people that you hire before you find the ones that will. But the bottom line is that as this model becomes more part of a society, that society will become enlightened. And people will be motivated to not just develop an income, but to develop a soul. And humility will be as important or more so than whether people are earning a living. It is so much a different kind of way of looking at things, yet it still is very capitalistic in other ways, that it is almost, it sounds like something like, well, nobody could do that because of this or that or whatever. It can be done, but the resistance to it is we don't have a population that has enough emphasis on the development of humility. And we need to work on that right from the beginning, like I said earlier, with children and families. Because children aren't being sent to work. It's the young adults that go off and do that. And by that point, the spiritual discipline is oftentimes remedial rather than developmental. And trying to catch up is so difficult. When someone is in a remedial position, they seldom reach their potential. And the lack of humility leads oftentimes to a stagnating income rather than to a constantly inclining income. Income is not the only means by any stretch to measure whether someone has humility, but the two do go hand in hand to a fairly big extent. The most successful people have humility. I'm not talking about someone who makes zillions of dollars in a very short time and lacks humility. I'm talking about someone who makes zillions of dollars forever, their whole lifetime for lifetimes, because they have humility and that's a part of who they are. Some people do go the wrong way and can make fast and easy money, so to speak, in short periods of time, but they're almost always doomed to losing it. And by the end of this whole lifetime, they will be broke, because the spiritual side of life isn't just about growing fast. It has the part of the soul which is immortal. And you don't just lose it, it doesn't go away. It becomes indelible as part of our beingness. And that's true of the material world and business and working in it. Okay, let's move on because we're not going to get through all the things I wanted to cover tonight. But I'm hoping that humility is starting to make some sense to people. I'm choosing the areas that I think are the weakest ones in our society so that we can grow in those. There are all kinds of places we can go with this. But let's talk about humility in terms of technology and science. Science is the fifth ray. Technology is the third ray. The third ray is weakening at this time in our senses. The throat chakra is what we're using. It's affecting us in ways in which we're misusing technology and seeking it for wrong purposes. Technology ultimately is what we call civilization in our society. It's all the things that we take into our world and become extension of our senses and sometimes the lower parts of the way we think. Like computers. And we use this technology so that we can expand our reach. So we can do things that if we didn't have it, we couldn't do it. We are in a vastly grown technology base, especially the last century or so. This last century, has been such a big improvement that many people don't even grasp the differences in life. Now, the part of this that where spiritual issues get really mixed up, and humility is a great factor in it, is that we need to see that when we bring something into us, we have it. Every part of that that we bring in, I don't care if it's a cell phone, computer, television set, automobile, airplane, doesn't matter. All these things that we are using are taking from the world of more elemental designs, you know, like metals, the chemistry of everything, and so on, and pinpointing and making it creatively to extend our senses and our abilities to affect the world and to basically, intelligently or unintelligently, interact. It's all about interaction, really, is the bottom line. And so our interactions can either be far more virtuous if we're humble, or they can be far more selfish if we're egotistical. A lot of the technological inventions are being used in very egotistical ways, and that is leading to the eventual destruction of the technologies. Now, why is that true? Well, because without humility, everything becomes temporary and will eventually be destroyed by the selfishness of us. We don't recognize this and don't think it's true until societies fail. I mean, this has happened so many times. And the civilization itself crumbles. The technologies just disappear. They literally disappear. And the reason for this is there's a lack of humility, there's a lack of gratitude, and people, through their selfishness, misuse the technologies, and they become toxic to the civilization. They actually destroy the civilization rather than improve it. They either use it for violence and war, either against themselves or against other societies and nations, or they may use it in ways that are sadistic, sexually destructive, manipulative, that are controlling of others, that are maliciously trying to defraud others. They're used in every malevolent way, and it eventually destroys the civilization. It's happening as I speak. And the third ray, which was focused on the development of civilization, has stopped growing, and now it's starting to diminish. What does that mean? That means that if the only way to keep the civilization going at its level of intelligent interactions or of just an interaction, intelligent or otherwise, the only way to keep it going is to make it immortal as part of the actions of a soul. That part which is strictly human, which is egotistical, that is arrogantly used, that is selfishly used, will quickly diminish and fail to work. People will learn how to steal your identity. People will learn how to hack your computers. Governments will come in and take all your freedoms. They'll learn all the systems that you use and use them against you. They'll have drones, and they'll come and spy on you. Maybe they'll zap you and kill you. They'll have all kinds of systems to prevent people from being able to live freely. Freedom is the basis under which you measure the ability, ultimately, for people to interact. If freedom is removed, even if you still have love, interaction declines rapidly. And the ability to continue the interactions diminishes. We're in a society now that is on the cusp of collapsing, and we don't even know. Because we're not humble enough to even see it. In a few more years, so many of the things that we take for granted will become jeopardized by our own selfishness and illusion. And only those who are humble will be able to see it, and those who are grateful will be able to solve some of the problems. But I don't know if there's enough of them to preserve the level of technology that we are peaking at the present time. And that could be a rude awakening for quite a few people. The biggest danger to us in the United States and some other countries like the United States right now is the loss of freedom. That's because evil sees freedom as its major enemy, and it's going to seek to use a lack of humility and gratitude as its tool for being destructive to people by removing freedom. The technologies will all become toxic. Toxic meaning they're used in some way that destroys freedom and reduces, eventually, love. At first, the people who destroy the freedom say they want to increase the love. But that's just a total red herring, and it's nonsense. It's not true, and it won't happen that way. But those who believe it's true say, well, I want to be with all the people who are going to be loving, even if we're going to have less freedom. What they don't get is that the activities will be decreased. As they decrease, you go backwards in time. Eventually, the civilization declines. Also, the ability to get the product of what increased interaction means, which is money, decreases. Or the value of the money decreases. You could have the same number of dollars, but they aren't worth anything. So the results are that people become poor. And they become enslaved because they've lost freedom. Slaves who are poor are going to have an even harder time being humble and grateful. So the souls become more distant. And evil is on the rampage. This is the problem we're facing right now. Right as I speak, right now. It's not just happening here in the United States. It's happening throughout most of the first world countries and some others. I don't know if there's any place you can go to avoid it. But certainly, if you're involved in a place that you can't interact levels with others the way you need to be able to be of service to them, you should consider finding someplace else to be, at least temporarily. Because to cease to create is like giving in to the darkness. And there's not much reason to be alive. But I understand that a lot of people feel as though they cannot solve the equation. They can't, don't know what to do. But there are answers. The answers are to vote in the right people. That certainly didn't happen in the last election. But doesn't mean that the right people were running. I mean, so you have to look at the whole nature of the problem. And it also means that you've got to look at how you can work around the system as best as possible before you have to leave it. So try to do both, if it's at all possible, to continue to be as creative as possible and still work within what is there until it's no longer going to happen. And I don't think there's a heck of a lot of time left. We're certainly down to single years now rather than decades. But we still got some opportunities. And those opportunities need to be addressed. Remember, if you're humble, you're more able to see the answers to problems that seem insolvable. And you're not stymied by failures. Why is that true? Because the humble person is so open-minded that they are able to bring together and synthesize maybe hundreds of different things that other people are ignoring and come up with solutions that seem to be almost miraculous. They may not be as miraculous as there is a lack of creativity in too many people, but at least those people can be the solvers of some serious dilemmas hitting us now and in the very near future. The world is very much on the edge. Now, could evil be strong enough to make it so that humility almost disappears and therefore this souls are virtually detached from humanity? Yes, but there is a plan, if that happens, to literally end this particular planet's existence. Now, it sounds like terrible, you know, but it's not, because it's like it's the last thing. You don't leave a world just become completely evil. It will eventually destroy itself, but in some circles, that's looking at it from a very silly viewpoint. You can encourage its destruction by the natural consequences of evil without having to allow it to just happen over a very long time. You can accelerate karma. Now, some people don't know that. There's these beings called Lipka Lords. That's their job. They accelerate karma when there's too much evil. I know it sounds too far out for most people to believe, but God isn't a deist. God doesn't just make the universe and leave. God is part of the universe, and part of God's plan is to only let evil grow to a certain level. Within its plan, there are many checks and balances, and some of them are supernatural. Some of them are beyond what human beings either believe in or understand, and sometimes both. And so it is from that standpoint that we can say, in humility, that there are such great things, no matter how bad things get, there will be a resolution. And don't think that it's going to end all of everything. It just might end this planet, and that's a terrible thing. A planet is a beautiful thing. Who wants to destroy something of such beauty? But it could happen. Let's think about it more positively for the rest of our time. But nonetheless, I wanted to add that there so that people don't think, well, okay, we'll just turn off the lights and forget it, go home. No, we still have options, and we should look at the situation from that standpoint, but also recognize that there are answers to all of the issues that we're dealing with one way or another. Now, to finish out tonight, I wanted to say that in each of us, we have almost by the minute choices to either be humble and grateful or to not. Almost by the minute in our waking life. So when people ask me, well, when should I be humble? It's every minute. The opportunities are so vast. And if you don't see them, it's because you're not looking. You're not open to what there is to be done. So the first thing is challenge yourself to see where you can be more humble, where your humility will shine every minute of your life. And if you can do that, even if you can't do it every minute, maybe for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, pick some number of minutes that you can substantially comply with and make it work for you. And every moment that we are more humble, every moment we are more on the path of being our soul. Even if you only increase it a few moments a day, that's a very big change. And I am going to be very grateful to those that do that. Believe me, even a small amount of change will change your life and change everyone else's. So this is my, I guess, pleading with all of you. Give it a try. I covered a lot of area tonight. Let's try it out. See if it's true to begin with. This show is a show to try to challenge the truth of everything. And see if it really is what I said it is. There's many things you can do in your own life, in your own mind, to figure out whether what I'm saying is a bunch of nonsense or if it really is the truth. If you find that it is, then please experiment with making some changes in yourself so that next week you will be more open-minded and more humble, and at the same time, you'll have that gratitude to all who are doing the same. Well, I hope this has really made a difference, and there was a lot more, a lot of other areas I could have talked about improving humility. But each has its own value, and I have to look at, well, this will probably do this much, and probably this will do that much. We'll do another show on this sometime in the future that will include those areas that I left out tonight. And I hope that this really has, you know, made something of a difference for as many people as possible. And if you do send me some emails and I don't respond, think about that. Okay, well, I'm out of time for sure. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.